Right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, April 23rd, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday. We've almost made it. One more day to get to that Friday. I know every single week is just like we're on the hamster wheel again. It gets harder and harder. But I'm here. I looked out the window and there's sleet outside. It is a cloudy 33 degrees and sleeting slightly here in upstate New York. I saw Buffalo actually had a good half inch on the ground, so I had to kind of laugh and point at them. But it'll be over soon. I'm sure by this afternoon it'll be all melted, so I'm not complaining too loudly. So yesterday we had Mr. Shali Lama on the show. It was quite a treat. I don't get to see Shali too often. We only pass during the week on Sundays while he's on air and I'm sitting waking up drinking my coffee. So that's about as much talking as we do. So that was nice to have him on because we don't get to chat often. And a few of the things that we had talked about, it was more of a generalized conversation, but a few of the things that we had talked about was just how we get trapped into the system and the dangling carrot. You know, Shali and I both coming from the tech world, 9 to 5, more like, you know, 9 to midnight. I don't know. I worked a lot of hours when I was in the office. And there never, ever, ever was a lack of things to do. And of course, the dangling carrot, especially when you're doing any type of support role, whether you be an engineer or you're actually in sales itself, is commission. So, you know, they'll get you to work an 80-hour week and you won't think anything of it because a promise of a bigger paycheck's always on the horizon. And I got to tell you, it's really horrible to see. You don't get paid for any of that, any of those 80-hour weeks. And I mean, I literally did 80 hours a week for about 10 years. And you can ask my husband. I mean, I dragged him along with me. So we both did that. But you don't get paid for any of that. Your salary, you know, or salary plus commission. And you only get commission if you get the job. And then you only get a decent commission if you get the job and you didn't fuck up. You know, you didn't forget a big switch or something. Oh, yeah, you were low bid. Well, it's because you forgot something. Duh. You know, that comes out of your profit. So it was a pretty, though, I got to tell you, I mean, you gambled every time and you put all that time and effort in there. You put friends aside. You put listening to music aside. You know, I have this one friend who just cannot believe if we go back through the late 90s anywhere through until, like, let's say 2006 or 7 or 8, like after I had a baby and was forced to slow down because of major health issues. If you go anywhere in that 10 to 12 year period, I don't have a clue. I don't know any bands. I don't remember any news. It's like a big, I mean, 9/11. Yes, I remember 9/11, of course. But I was working. I remember having the TV on. I remember hearing Rumsfeld saying that they were missing the $2 trillion. I remember saying to my husband, and we were sitting out here in the office. We had the TV up on the shelf out here, which it's no longer out here. But I remember saying to my husband, did you hear that? $2 trillion. And the very next day, bang. And then, of course, the world changed from there, too. So I just have this large gap in my time, though, that I definitely blame first and foremost on that dangling carrot and trying to keep up with the Joneses because we were told that's the way it was supposed to be. So anyway, yesterday after the show, I was digging through, doing my homework like I always do, reading stories, watching clips, whatever. And I ran across two stories, and I honestly don't know. Oh, I think actually it might be here. It is. It's very long, though. So this one I'm not going to read. I want to maybe, I'll pick out some points maybe for tomorrow. But one was on a Discover magazine, and it was titled The Second Coming of Sigmund Freud. And it really digs into looking at the two different sciences of psychoanalysis and neuroscience. And the whole story, I mean, it's very long and convoluted, but the story ends up revolving around this doctor. He's a doctor. But when he was a child, his brother, who was his best friend, actually hit his head and got brain injured, and it changed his entire personality, and he was never able to play with his brother anymore when they were growing up. And so he was saying how that affected his whole life, and when he went into medicine, that's what he wanted to do, was go into medicine and find a way to fix his brother. And he got his degree in neuroscience and learned everything there was to know, but it still didn't explain how this hunk of gelatinous matter between our ears dictated a personality, or dictated the person that was behind it. And so that's when he started to study some of the psychology, and he got his psychology degree, and then really started stitching the two sciences together. And it was interesting, though, because we see now at how we're being manipulated so easily. And as, I mean, we've been raising the red flag here for how long, as they learn more and more and more and more and more and more about our brains. And don't think they're not doing that. From the brain, DARPA's Brain Project, well, it's not really DARPA's Brain Project. It is a very large global brain project that military, university, and national health organizations worldwide are involved in. You also have large corporations that are working on segments of it as well, to be able to crack every mystery inside the brain. So at some point they'll be able to upload memories, right? We know that PTSD, remove them. Actually, Brandon just did a story yesterday on brain implants. So we'll have to take a look at that one. But you know, all this crazy stuff that sounded like science fiction before, but I'm telling you, this brain project is, it's going to be the end. It, when you no longer have the ability to figure out in the sandbox that's called your brain, whether or not a decision that you are, that you need to make in the future is ethical or unethical, and you get punished for trying to make those ethical decisions or unethical decisions in your brain without ever doing anything, just thinking about it, and thought crime becomes real, we're done. There's nothing left. So that can't happen. And that's why I get so freaked out when I see all this stuff. So anyway, tying back to this gentleman who became a doctor, you know, in his childhood trauma with his brother or whatever. But he was very sincere. Like I said, not all these, I don't think all these scientists are doing this from an evil perspective, but I think that they're helping the machine that they don't necessarily realize the bigger scope of the picture of what their great research could be handed into the wrong hands, let's say. So anyway, he's doing some great research, though. He was talking about how there's all kinds of signs and symptoms from a mental issue scenario that are definitely caused by trauma to the brain, like processing language. And they're able now, with these low radiation, high definition MRIs, or CAT scans, actually, because MRIs are magnetic. CT is the one that's radiation. With the low radiation, high resolution CAT scan, you know, they pretty much can see when you're thinking or talking about something, which parts of the brains are lighting up. So, you know, and the ability to insert the fiber optic things. I just saw a story the day before, too, where now they can put these things in your head and remote control people. So we'll have to look at that. I mean, they're getting really close, guys. And so that's why this is scary to me. But to know about the whole psychological component, and then it's been used on us already since at least the early 1900s with Bernays, the obey and consume story, like we were talking about yesterday. And to take that now the next step, where the intrusion into our brains is no longer subtle brainwashing or flashes of light like they've been experimenting with for all these years. Now we're talking about being able to read your thoughts from distances and manipulate them and use, you know, I don't know, nanobots to rewire your cortical stem or something. Who knows? You know, I mean, once you got little nano doctors in your brain, who knows what they can do? And that's what I've been saying from day one. Careful when they keep telling you that Fido needs to get a vaccine. You need to get a vaccine. I actually was listening to BBC late last night, and they did an update, and we're going to actually look at that, the Iowa bird flu outbreak, you know, worst one we've seen in 100 years. I don't know. It is one of the worst. I don't know if this is the first. I know we've had it before in small amounts. We'll have to look at one of the stories. I don't remember if they actually said it was one of the worst, but it could have been. But they're panicking because it's been over a month now. And the BBC report said that they are working on, oh, big surprise, vaccines for this new bird flu strain to be able to inoculate your chickens and people. So put on a seatbelt, because we heard video yesterday, the day before, with them talking about getting together a vaccine, though this is the flu vaccine from the year before, getting Fido to line up and get his flu shot too. All right? And don't think there isn't an agenda here. We actually were looking at all this. And someone brought up a great point in chat at the very end of the show from 2 days ago, when we looked at the dog flu, the bird flu, the oxytocin, right? The love chemical in the bond that you form with your dog. They discovered again another biochemical reaction that they're learning all about, so they can do what? They can hijack it. You know, I think it's neat. I mean, I have always been just absolutely ravenous for information. I can't help it. Since as a little kid, I've been like this. I eat it up. Anything that I can take is a new tidbit of info and file it in the card catalog I call a brain. You know, I mean, we all know that knowledge is power. And of course, having an English degree, you know, being able to speak and defend and have a debate is something that I do. But it's not something that was ever learned. It's just something that I've had. My mother used to say, you should be a lawyer. You know, glad I didn't become a lawyer. I had too many ethics. No, I have a couple friends who are lawyers that I grew up with, and they're all good people. I guess it depends. It depends on what dangling carrot you're chasing, right? But I don't know, that made me lose my train of thought now, the argument. Oh, I eat this information up. And so as we're digging through all this stuff, what I'm realizing is, it's like, oh, look at this new discovery, right? That's how they sell it to us. Oh, new wonderful discovery. We cured some new disease. And right, we were talking yesterday, now it's cancer. And I always said, caution. Cancer was the one cure we've been waiting for forever. Forever. How many people in this country, let alone the world, haven't had at least one loved one, one family member, one pet even, that died from cancer? It's touched everyone. Cancer was the biggie. And the day they came, I said this even long before. I remember saying this on air. The day they come out and they tell you that they found the cure from cancer, for cancer, that's the day you need to be running. And sure than shit, don't they come out? And then as time goes on, we find out more and more about this quote-unquote coming cure for cancer. And it happens to be the nanobot factories inside your body. I mean, seriously. That probably is one of the ones that has tripped me out the most out of all these things that we've learned. They're really going to try to sell that to people. All right, so getting back to this dangling carrot, though, so interesting that we were talking about the whole, and I mean, we've spent a lot of time on this, the whole dopamine hijacking, that's a big pathway. Seems like oxytocin, that's another hijacking pathway. We should dig a little more into that. I'm sure adrenaline or, it's one of the other feel-good chemicals. There's a couple of them. Serotonin, that's another one. You know, they're all mingled in with sense of accomplishment and ego and that type of thing. And it's very interesting. I mean, that if anyone wants it, and Mike, this might be one. I don't know if I posted this on Dystopia News. I'll drop this in chat right now if anyone is interested. But that story that I was talking about when they mixed in the he was a neurologist and then went and got his psychology degree. And so, and now he's really working on the two sides as therapy and that and understanding. That was a very good story. But I'm saying, and it is from April 2014, but I'm saying it's very long. But if anyone's interested, it's there. So anyway, I ran across another story. And what I thought was cool is that Shelly and I, we were just talking about these two very things about the psychology and the mind manipulation. And I think I'm going to try and do a whole week. I need to just find some time, though. I got to break it into chunks. But I need to get with my friend who specializes in mind control and see, like, what, because I don't know enough. I mean, I know about all these different types, but, like, I'm not some expert in it. So I need some help trying to at least break out what the presentation should be. And maybe we'll do five whole days on mind control. All right. So anyway, this story came out yesterday. And it is titled, and I want to read this because it's obvious to all of us. But when you hear it, and again, this is another old story. This is from December 9th of 2014. But when you hear it, you're like, yeah, that's exactly it. Your lifestyle has already been designed. It's titled The Real Reason for the 40-Hour Work Week. And, you know, like I was saying yesterday, you realize, and I'm sure many of us have now, that when you're on the outside, you realize that you've been selling your life for a paycheck. Now, are your moments living, doing things that actually mean something to you or are enjoyable, or spending them with a loved one or a child or seeing beautiful places and maybe not having the brand new car or the extra big house or this year's trendy shorts? I don't know. I mean, is it worth it? Because I was always brainwashed that it was. And as I'm reading this story I ran across yesterday, and we had just gotten off the air and been talking about the very same thing, it's not. And the only reason we're trapped in this system is because we still, many of us, are still thinking that that American dream can be attained. And, I mean, hey, mainstream media even said that there's no more American dream. So get over it, people. It's gone. With this TPP and this fast tracking that could be coming to a Senate member near you, a TPP contract near you, I mean, the American dream might turn into the third world dream here pretty quickly. So anyway, let me read this story just a little bit. I thought you might appreciate. By David Kane. Says, well, I am in the working world again, and I found myself a well-paying gig in the engineering industry, and life finally feels like it's returning to normal after my 9 months of traveling. See, now, he was someone in the workforce that had decided to check out. I mean, I was thinking he must be European, but actually he's Canadian. I didn't know that Canadians were also lucky like Europeans, where they could take sabbaticals for 9 months to a year. New Zealand, they do it too. And they just go travel the world. And then while they're traveling, they go get themselves a job while they're in Europe or in Spain, you know, or wherever. You know, we don't do that here. And we really should. I've done my two cross-country trips. And both times I quit my job and went and said, screw everybody. And it was the most amazing thing I ever did. And it really does not cost that much if you decide to do it economically, if you don't go out and spend wantonly, like the obey and consume mindset, you know. And all right, anyway, let's read, because he gets into exactly what we were saying. All right, so anyway, he was returning from 9 months of traveling. Because I had been living quite a different lifestyle while I was away, the sudden transition back to the 9-to-5 existence has exposed something about it that I had overlooked before. Since the moment I was offered the job, I had been markedly more careless with my money. Not stupid, just a little quick to pull out my wallet. And as an example, I'm buying expensive coffees again, even though they aren't nearly as good as New Zealand's exceptional flat white. So that's where he must have gone. Canadian who went to New Zealand traveling, and I don't get to savor the experience of drinking them on a sunny cafe patio. When I was away, these purchases were less offhanded, and I enjoyed them more. And I'm not talking about extravagant purchases. I'm talking about small-scale, casual, promiscuous spending on stuff that really doesn't add a whole lot to my life. Isn't that what it's all about, guys? They got us to fall in love with things. That's what they did. They got us to have almost like an oxytocin reaction when looking at our things. And you know, when I lived alone, I didn't get married until I was 35, and I worked my ass off. I mean, like I said, I don't remember like a whole 10 or 12 year period of the history of the world, because all I did was work. That's all that mattered to me. And when I wasn't working, I was sleeping, or I had some cute guy I was going out with, and it didn't matter. So, you know, whatever. Life did not matter. The news did not matter. International events did not matter. The stock market melting down did not matter. Nothing mattered. I had a job. I had money. I was buying shit. And I had a cute guy somewhere anytime I wanted. So whatever. That's all mattered. I was the bachelorette. But the sad fact of the matter is all of that was superficial. It was all pretend. And when push came to shove, and one day I was forced to sit back and discover how unhappy I was at my life, though I had everything that I thought I needed according to what they told me I needed. When I sat back and I really looked at what was missing, it was the more esoteric things in life, like having somebody to share things with. And not just share, but someone who actually gives a shit. Like, you know, your friends, you're like, oh, yeah, I went somewhere and got these great pictures, or I saw this great, you know, sunset, or these great storm clouds, or whatever. You know, you have friends that you might want to share something like that with. Well, some friends care. Some friends just humor you, you know. But nobody, like, there probably are very few of us who have friends who can look at that and, like, actually feel what you felt. Like, the reason why you wanted to even share that with somebody, because it was, like, so amazingly incredible. You know, you don't really find that in a friend. So I'm saying, like, somebody that you can really connect with. But not only that, when you work, and you work so hard, and in the end, you're standing on your mountain with all your hands full, with all your shit, going, yeah, I made it. And nobody cares. There's nobody who says, hey, Joel, good job. You made it. Hey, now let's kick back and relax and enjoy all this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there was no prize in the end. And all those things that they told us were prizes weren't prizes. They were just more bills. They were wanton spending, as he calls it, right? Promiscuous spending. That didn't mean anything. They were trying to fill that hole that wasn't being filled. And actually, let's read a little bit more, because it's exactly what they start talking about in here. It says, in hindsight, I think I've always done this when I'm well-employed, spending happily during the flush times, having spent 9 months living on a no-income backpacking lifestyle. I can't help but be a little more aware of this phenomenon as it happens. And that's a good thing. I seriously think everybody should live as a poor fuck. Because you know what? When I was in college, I paid for my college education. At one point, I worked 3 jobs to pay for my tuition. I didn't get shit from my parents for college. And I'll tell you what, I got a hell of a good education. And it was because every penny of that, I had to earn myself. And so every second of college, I made sure that I got my money's worth. And trust me, people, I squeak when I spend money. Okay, if I'm spending money, I better be getting what I wanted, you know? But what a damn good education I got compared to my friends who came from Long Island, whose mom and dads were, you know, I don't know, lung surgeons or oral surgeons. I had one friend whose dad was a lung surgeon, one friend whose dad was an oral surgeon. And you know what? They partied and went to see dead shows and did all kinds of fun things, but they never had to earn it. Earning it and living below the poverty level, which I was, I didn't have shit. I had nothing. I had one pot and what are they called? Those little heating elements to cook on. Whatever that's called. You know what I'm talking about? Like a single heating element? That was how I made my food. It was a pot, and I had two or three stolen milk crates that we stole from a food service at 4 o'clock in the morning, stacked up so I could put my ramen noodles in there. But it gave me character. That's what I say. All right, anyway, let's go back. But the thing is that it brings you outside. See, when I was in college, I hadn't been in the rat race really yet. I'd been from a teenager, from thinking I had to have my Nikes and my alligator shirts, and I was in that teenager demanding obey and consume. And if I didn't have perfect hair and perfect clothes, then I was a nobody. I mean, I had already been brainwashed into that religion. So taking it down a notch in college was a good thing. But then, you know, once you get out of college, you get a job, they sucked you right back in. So anyway, here we go. It says, I suppose I do it because I feel I've regained a certain stature now that I am again an amply paid professional, which seems to entitle me to certain levels of wastefulness. There is a curious feeling of power when you get to drop a couple of 20s without a trace of critical thinking. It feels good to exercise that power of the dollar. Remember, that's the draw, the dangle, the power of the dollar. And that's what all these rich fuckers, they love it. They love it. It's addictive. I mean, maybe, I don't know, we should look into it. I bet you it activates that dopamine center for the love of things. Feels good to exercise that power of the dollar when you know it will, quote, grow back, unquote, pretty quickly anyway. What I'm doing isn't unusual at all. Everyone else seems to do this. In fact, I've only returned to the normal consumer mentality, ding, 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 after having spent some time away from it. One of the most surprising discoveries I made during my trip was that I spent much less per month traveling in foreign countries, including countries more expensive than Canada. That's where we found out that he was Canadian. Than I did as a regular working Joe back at home. I also had much more free time, and I was visiting some of the most beautiful places in the world. I was meeting new people left and right. I was calm and peaceful and otherwise having an unforgettable time, and somehow it cost me much less than my humble 9-to-5 lifestyle here in one of Canada's least expensive cities. It seems I got much more for my dollar, and I'm going to add for your life, for those minutes of your life you can never get back that you're selling to the machine, I'm telling you. It says, it seems like I got much more for my dollar when I was traveling. Why? He titles the next section, A Culture of Unnecessaries. Yes. You know, I mean, we could win so much of this game if people just woke up to this piece, the culture of unnecessaries. And like I said yesterday, the century of the self, that documentary is like a slap in the face. I swear to God, I mean, I honestly did not realize that it is this far, this wide, or been going on for this many generations where we have been brainwashed into this society to make the money. It is all about generating income for the corporations. And exactly as Shally said, this is a corporate structure that they formed for them to continue to make profit. And in the meantime, it enslaves us into their system so we cannot escape. It says, here in the West, a lifestyle of unnecessary spending has been deliberately cultivated and nurtured in the public by big business. And ding, 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 Edward Bernays. That's where it all started. And yes, big business contracted Bernays. I'm going to drop you this picture that the dollar with the buy and consume on it that was in that story. I actually like that. Companies in all kinds of industries have a huge stake in the public's penchant to be careless with their money. They will seek to encourage the public's habit of casual or non-essential spending whenever they can. In the documentary, The Corporation, and you know, I've seen that reference quite a number of times. I have not seen that. There is a link, so I will drop this when I'm done. So if you want to see it, search it. I'm going to try and watch this, but let's hear what they say. In the documentary, The Corporation, a marketing psychologist discusses one of the methods she used to increase her sales. Her staff carried out a study on what the effect of nagging children, oh my God, had on their parents' likelihood of buying a toy for them. Anyone that has had a nagging child driving them batshit crazy over something near Christmas time knows exactly how horrible that is. It all comes from the television, by the way. If you don't let your kids watch TV, they don't nag you for stuff. But I'll tell you what, the second my kid sees a commercial for something even remotely cool, she comes into the next room and she is literally regurgitating every single word she just heard about some newfangled product that we have to have right now for $19.95 on this website. And she'll say it too, like, you know, backscratcher.com, mom, you got to go out there. It's only $19.95 and it's only for the next 3 hours. I'm like, oh my God. Is it really that easy to hijack the human brain? Apparently it is. Her staff carried out a study on what the effects of the nagging children had on their parents' likelihood of buying a toy for them. And they found out that 20 to 40% of the purchases of their toys would not have occurred if the child did not nag his parents. 1 in 4 visits to theme parks would not have taken place, and they use these studies to market their products directly to children, encouraging them to nag their parents to buy. I mean, I remember as a kid in the 70s watching my Saturday morning cartoons, and remember there was only once a week when we had cartoons on, so that was just fraught with hard-hitting marketing direct to children. And I remember even at one time them saying, kids, get your parents to. I mean, I literally remember that. And I remember like taking it like an order, like a dog, because they told me on the TV that I should get my parents to go get this. I went and badgered my parents until they wanted to like lock me in a room somewhere. But yeah, what a dastardly tactic. And I mean, I'm sure that's mild to some of the stuff they're doing to us. And how ethical is that? You know, that's something else that Michael Cross has talked about, digging into the psychology of marketing, is how these fucking creeps, who the hell are these slimy creeps sitting in a corporate marketing room figuring out psychologically how to hijack your children's brains to get you to buy more? I mean, that's really disturbing. All right, anyway, this, and now using sex to make you buy everything, including your children, your 8 to 12 year olds. I was just reading something the other day how that's totally screwing kids up. And I'm telling you, it is. There's no reason an 8-year-old needs to know anything about sex at all. Or be asking questions about it. I mean, maybe in this world. But I'm telling you, I didn't think about that shit until I was 13, not 8. And the only reason 8-year-olds are thinking about it is because they're being exposed to it wantonly in the name of making a buck. Since this marketing company alone represents many millions of dollars that were spent because of the demand that was completely manufactured. This is only one small example of something that has been going on for a very long time. Big companies didn't make their millions by earnestly promoting their virtues of their products. Right. They made it by creating a culture of hundreds of millions of people that want to buy way more than they need and try to chase away their dissatisfaction with money. Isn't that true? We buy stuff to cheer ourselves up, to keep up with the Joneses, to fulfill our childhood vision of what our adulthood would be like, to broadcast our status to the world, and for a lot of other psychological reasons that have very little to do with how useful the product really is. I mean, that we've been saying this forever. I just found it really interesting that we've just been talking about this again, and this decent story came out outlining everything that we have been saying. That's why I'm reading it now, because it really is disturbing at how easily we have all been manipulated, and we are still every day. How much stuff is in your basement or garage that you haven't used in the past year? Oh my God, like 100 boxes. All right, the real reason for the 40-hour work week. The ultimate tool for corporations to sustain a culture of this sort is to develop the 40-hour work week as the normal lifestyle. Under these working conditions, people have built a life in the evenings and on the weekends. This arrangement makes us naturally more inclined to spend heavily on entertainment and conveniences because our free time is so scarce. The author has only been back to work a few days, but already he's noticing that the more wholesome activities are quickly dropping out of his life. Walking, exercising, reading, meditating, and extra writing. And the one conspicuous similarity between these activities is that they cost little or no money, but they take time. Suddenly, I have a lot more money and a lot less time, which means I have a lot more in common with the typical working North American than I did a few months ago. While I was abroad, I wouldn't have thought twice about spending the day wandering through a national park or reading my book on the beach for a few hours. Now that kind of stuff feels like it's out of the question. Doing either would take most of one of my precious weekend days off. The last thing I want to do when I get home from work is exercise. It's also the last thing I want to do after dinner or before bed or as soon as I wake up. And that's really all the time I have on a weekday. And he's absolutely right, guys. It seems like a problem with a simple answer. Work less so I'd have much more free time. I'd already proven to myself that I could live a fulfilling lifestyle with less than I make right now. Unfortunately, this is close to impossible in my industry and in most others. You work 40 plus hours or you work zero. Yeah, or you work 40 plus hours for free if you want to do something that really means something. My clients and contractors are firmly entrenched in the standard workday culture, so it isn't practical to ask them not to ask anything of me after 1 p.m. Even if I could convince my employer not to. The 8-hour workday developed during the Industrial Revolution in Britain in the 19th century as a respite for factory workers who were being exploited with 14 and 16-hour workdays. Well, you know, it'd be nice to work a 14 or 16-hour workday and actually get paid hourly. I don't think I've ever had that happen. So that's still called exploitation. As technologies and methods advanced, workers in all industries became able to produce much more value in a shorter amount of time. And you think this would lead to shorter work days? Well, the 8-hour workday is too profitable for big business, not because of the amount of work that people actually get done in 8 hours, because the average office worker gets less than 3 hours of actual work done in 8 hours, but because it makes for such a purchase-happy public. Keeping free time scarce means people pay a lot more for convenience, gratification, and any other relief that money can buy. It keeps them watching television and its commercials, and it keeps them unambitious outside of work. It's very true, people. We have been led into a culture that has been engineered to leave us tired, hungry for indulgence, willing to pay a lot for the convenience and entertainment, and most importantly, vaguely dissatisfied with our lives so that we continue wanting things we don't have. I mean, it's a disease. They've given this man-made mental disease. We buy so much Because it always seems like something is still missing. I lived this exact life. I lived it. And then stood on top of the mountain with all my shit and said, well, this didn't fix anything, damn it. Western economies, particularly that of the United States, have been built in a very calculated manner on gratification, addiction, and unnecessary spending. That's exactly it. We spend to cheer ourselves up, to reward ourselves, to celebrate, to fix our problems, to elevate our status, and to alleviate our boredom. Can you imagine what would happen if all of America stopped buying so much unnecessary shit that doesn't add a lot of lasting value to our lives? Oh my God, the economy would collapse and never recover. All of America's well-publicized problems, including obesity, depression, pollution, and corruption, are what it costs to create and sustain a trillion-dollar economy. For the economy to be healthy, America has to remain unhealthy, right? We know that in every facet. I mean, all this precision healthcare, biopharma, and the cancer industry, and vaccines, and all this other crazy shit. They need us to be sick to make their multi-trillion dollar profits. Healthy, happy people don't feel like they need much that they don't already have. And that means that they don't buy a lot of junk, they don't need to be entertained as much, and they don't end up watching lots of commercials or television. The culture of an 8-hour workday is big business. Is big business's most powerful tool for keeping people in the same dissatisfied state where the answer to every problem is to buy something. You may have heard of Parkinson's Law. I haven't, actually. It is often used in reference to time usage. The more time you've been given to do something, the more time it'll take you to do it. It's amazing how much you can get done in 20 minutes if 20 minutes is all you have. But if you have all afternoon, it'll probably take twice as long. Most of us treat our money this way. If we make more, we spend more. It's not that we suddenly need to buy more because we make more, only that we can buy more, so we do. In fact, it's quite difficult for us to avoid increasing our standard of living or at least our rate of spending every time we get a raise. See, there was one thing I, as a kid, I always had that beaten into me. I mean, growing up in the 70s, everybody knows there wasn't a lot of money around. Shit was pretty depressing. My dad got laid off a lot during the oil shortages and all the stuff that was going on there. And so I was always one of those people that, you know, being raised that way, I always, and paying for my own college and everything, I was one of those people that when I made a few extra dollars, I didn't spend it. I might take, if I made two extra dollars, I might take one, but I put the second one away for a rainy day for if my car broke down or something because I didn't have anybody that I could turn to at all. I mean, my dad would help, but I'm one of those people that don't ask for help, you know, really stubborn. And so, you know, my car broke down. I didn't have someone to go say, hey, I need money to fix my car. I either needed to find someone to fix my car or I needed to find money to fix my car. But, you know, there was no given that there was money falling from the sky that I didn't have to ever worry about anything. So there was always, you know, and I would say still, if you don't miss it, like here's another thing. If you had a payment, let's say a college loan payment or a car payment, or, I don't know, some sort of debt that you've been paying off over a period of time, and you've been able to work that into your budget. When that payment is finished, like for a car, that was something that I did at one time, I remember. When my car payment finished, don't just say, woohoo, I have an extra $150 a month to go blow. Keep taking that money out and pretend your car payment's not paid off. And put that into an account called car. So when it comes time that your car is now broken or your car is now dead and you need another car, hey, guess what? You got a down payment put away. And you never missed it because that's already been coming out of your money every month. You know what I mean? Or like when your house is paid off. Don't burn that mortgage and then just start blowing the extra money. I mean, even take at least half of that and put that somewhere else for a rainy day, because you'll be happy you did. It's, you know, we were almost trained to just blow every penny. And I have friends like that who still do that. They have like no control over their monetary consumption. And I'm like, well, you know, you went out and bought all this stuff, but didn't you buy food first? You know what I mean? Like, I was always taught before play always comes work. And before buying toys, you always bought necessities, and you always, 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 before anything else on this planet, the bills came first, you know? Blame my dad for that one, but that's the way it always was. But that's some good, sound advice, you know? I mean, putting money away for a rainy day and always taking care of your obligations and your necessities for survival first, you know, that kind of makes you in a better boat than the person who doesn't know how to manage a penny and is always out blowing it on some toy that they don't need and then goes, holy shit, I don't have any food in the fridge. I'm hungry. Anyway, so it's, and I mean, I think that that is a problem that a lot of people have that's been groomed through this whole process we've just been reading about. But some people are able to control it better than others. And I think it has to do with the dopamine addiction. All right. Anyway, let's last two paragraphs. I don't think it's necessary to shun the whole ugly system and go live in the woods. Well, I think that would be kind of fun, though. Pretending to be a deaf mute, as Holden Caulfield has often fantasized. I don't know who that's referring to. It sounds like a movie. But we could certainly do well to understand what big commerce really wants us to be. They've been working for decades to create millions of ideal consumers, and they have succeeded. And unless you are a real anomaly, your lifestyle has already been designed. The perfect customer is dissatisfied but hopeful, uninterested in serious personal development, highly habituated to the television, working full-time, earning a fair amount, indulging during their free time, and somehow just getting by. Is this you? 2 weeks ago, I would have said, hell no, that's not me. But if all my weeks were like the one that has just been, that might now be wishful thinking. Do, do, do. I'm going to drop that story into chat. I really thought that was a good story, so I hope you don't mind me sharing that with you. That just struck me as putting a nice red bow at a whole bunch of things that we've been talking about over a whole lot of weeks, if not years, is this whole mental game that's being played and how we're being brainwashed, people. And I mean, there's no secret to that now. Anyway, I told you that I heard yesterday on BBC that now this bird flu outbreak is getting worse in Iowa, and they are working on vaccines now for bird flu for people and poultry. Here, let me see if I can find myself. I did not get a leg up before my bumper finished to pull Jules at UCY in. Let me make sure we don't have any music playing here or anything in the background from last night. I have no idea. All right, there we go. All right, so here, let's listen to this. Let's see how much bullshit they're going to spread here about, you know, be afraid, be very afraid. Not only did I see bird flu, I saw listeria. Here, wait, I got to kill this stuff for a second. Listeria has gotten even worse. Bluebell ice cream. Bluebell has now had to pull every product off the shelves, I believe. It's a multi-state outbreak of listeriosis. HIV, did you see this? Illinois, I believe it is. Indiana, sorry. Indiana has now the worst HIV epidemic ever before seen in the fucking history of the state. Has spread out of nowhere. And it's showing needles, so I don't know if they're doing like heroin, because of course there's so much fucking cheap heroin everywhere, as the poppy crop this year in Afghanistan is the best it's ever been, as our armed services have been protecting it. You know, I mean, none of this shit's an accident. Hold on. There was one more thing that I just saw. Oh, one person dead and 23 now hospitalized in Ohio after a botulism outbreak. I mean, do you guys see the writing on the wall? All the stuff we've been talking about, it is time to make some bank for the pharmaceutical companies. Last year, they announced, Wall Street announced, that if biopharma was going to be profitable, they had to start cutting back on R&D. We found that after we've been squawking forever, saying that all of this, you know, chicken little emergency, national emergency, we need to fast track these vaccines through the FDA, which what? Oh, has all this fraudulent research printed that all of these quote unquote pandemic-esque emergencies were all a way to get rid of that research and development line item budget for big pharma and for all the genomics companies and the nanotech companies. I mean, look at how this is all playing out now. Get rid of the R&D, and now the general public is legally becoming, especially when your vaccine injury compensation. Now, we just saw GlaxoSmithKline just lost a very large lawsuit. I saw that come out yesterday. But I'm going to tell you what I dug into. I think it was like $63 million or something. We'll have to look at that number. But it was, and it was for cases from 2003 through present for doing brain damage, I think, for one of the vaccinations. And when I dug in, actually, one of the first things that I did yesterday after I got off air was trying to find the profit margin, the true profit that GlaxoSmithKline had made between 2003 and 2014. And I couldn't find those numbers, but I did find numbers from 2006 to 2014, and they were fucking massive. And if we remember anything that the interview with, and I always forget her name, but the woman who wrote Confessions of an RX Drug Pusher, who was on April and Verstein's show, what she said is that it costs too much money for them to make sure that these drugs are safe. It is more economical for them to put the product out. And then if there's lawsuits over it and it can be proven, because it's very difficult to prove that it was caused by the pharmaceutical or by the vaccination, then to do a payout. Because there's just so many bazillions in profit. And that's true. So anyways, we're seeing all these now in the psyche. Oh, my God, we have an outbreak of this. Oh, my God, we have an outbreak of that. And it was just whooping cough. And it was just Ebola. And it was just measles. And it was just, I mean, seriously? And then what do we see? We see bird flu now showing up in dogs, coming straight from China. First time ever. Now, I just saw something else, too. Wait, let's scroll. I saw something else, and I might not run into it, but I'm not going to see it quickly. There was something else that was just a first time ever before seen. And every time you see that, people roll your eyeballs, okay, because it's a crock of shit. If it hasn't been seen here in 50 years, oh, my God. I mean, I'm going to call absolute, utter bullshit on this whole fear porn. And remember, fear is one of those brainwashing control mechanisms. And, you know, when I used to hear people talk about this, about fear, the fear button, fear, 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 I used to think that they were just crazy people making shit up, you know, DARPA uses fear or whatever. No, guys, they've been in brain research. They discovered the fear button. They discovered also the flashing lights. I mean, that's from your television. They've already known that. Different frequencies, sound waves. They can manipulate brain thoughts, insert and delete memories. I mean, they've been doing all this research with PTSD patients. Anyway, yeah, let's hear how this bird flu is going in Iowa. And it's pretty significant, too, because we have this whole collapse of the food chain coming. And this farm was like 5.3 million chickens just on this one farm alone. They produced 1 in 5 eggs in the entire country on this farm. And this bird flu can be spread through casual contact on your clothing to your pets.
And Dr. Holly, let's turn to another subject. Millions of hens have to be euthanized following an outbreak of bird flu in Iowa. Up to 5.3 million chickens will be killed. Now, this highly infectious and deadly H5N2 virus is already ravaging poultry industries in 12 states. So, Dr. Holly, how dangerous is this bird flu?
Holy crap, 12 states! Wait a minute, I didn't hear 12. Now, hold on, they're going to highlight them all and put the names on them. Let's see where they are.
To the human population, we know it's already within the...
You know what, they're not actually labeling all the states, but I see Iowa, looks like Illinois, looks like Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon. The states are just in red, but I'm using my big brain for geography. Wisconsin. That's not Michigan. That's Wisconsin. And then I'm not sure what's under there. But it's the whole upper. It's the middle part of the country. Then it goes all the way north and then straight across to the Pacific Northwest.
Poultry population.
It's very serious within the bird and poultry population, but it does not affect humans.
Now, what's interesting that it does not affect humans, I went and dug up this H2, whatever they said it was, H2N5. I don't know. They said at the beginning, we had the two strains yesterday when we were looking at it infecting dogs. And on the CDC's own website, it showed that it was infectious to humans.
Avian flu virus, and it's called H5N2.
H5N2. We'll look that one up.
And it has not been shown to be able to infect humans. That having been said, it is really critical that they are able to control this within the bird population so that it doesn't continue to evolve into something that may one day affect humans. But right now...
I think my bumper started. Oh, my God, guys. All right, you have an awesome Thursday. Make sure you stick around tonight.